We're learning all about drones here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Amazon may soon send up drones to gather data. Amazon was awarded a patent for home surveillance drones last month. Closer to home here in Wisconsin, law enforcement agencies are relying on drones in a variety of ways. Our state is among several nationwide seeing the highest use of drones by state and local public safety agencies. That's according to the Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College. What excites you about drones in the sky? What concerns do you have about privacy and safety? Are you in the market for a drone? What do you want to know? How to shop around for one? We're at 800-642-1234. Chris Jeschka is a lieutenant with the Wisconsin State Patrol's Special Operations Section. He oversees the patrol's air support unit, which launched its own drone program in May. Lieutenant Jeschka, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, Kate, and a little belated happy 4th of July.
Yeah, you too. So the Wisconsin State Patrol launched this program in May. What got the patrol interested in starting up this program?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We, State Patrol has actually had a air support unit since 1959. In fact, 1959, State Patrol asked then Governor Gaylord Nelson for our first airplane. And since that time, the State Patrol has been in the business of providing public safety support with manned aircraft. And currently, State Patrol has three manned aircraft based in locations around the state, Eau Claire, Green Bay, and Madison, to provide about an hour's response time to basically any emergency that we may be called on to support. There's a challenge, however. We fly fixed-wing aircraft, and quite often the weather prevents us from being able to respond when we're most needed. Our flights include quite a bit of photography flights for, you know, flood or tornado damage. During that time, the weather's usually bad, and we're unable to get that manned aircraft up into the air simply because the weather limits our ability to fly. So recent technology, probably within the past 5 years, has allowed us to capitalize on drones now. And like you said, back in this past May, the State Patrol, we obtained five new unmanned aircraft to support our manned aircraft program. And this allows us a couple abilities that our manned aircraft do not have. Flying fixed wing, we're flying at about 100 miles an hour up in the air, and we're unable to stop and hover. If we see something, if we're out at a search and locate mission for a lost child or something like that, if we see something that perks our interest that needs to be looked at, we can't just stop. And drones allow us to do a couple things. It allows us to fly in bad weather. It allows us to hover. It allows us to take fantastic photos and video. And those photos and videos are marked with GPS coordinates, which comes in very handy when we're out doing search and rescue missions. So we're excited about this. We're new to the process, but we've already utilized our drones on several public safety missions already.
Yeah, so search and rescue missions. What are some other ways you see that you'll be able to use these drones?
Yeah, there's quite a bit. Obviously, search and rescue, as you mentioned, but just recently, some of your listeners might be familiar with the Oconomowoc hostage situation that occurred out on Highway 67 by I-94 a couple weeks ago. State Patrol had their drone out there assisting Waukesha Sheriff's Department tactical team. You know, we were able to hover that drone up over the suspect vehicle and monitor what was going on to the best of our ability in that vehicle and provide that information right back to the incident command post, who could then, you know, feed what we were seeing right out to the tactical teams on scene. We've used our aircraft at the recent large crash down on I-94 in Racine County to take photos and videos and provide a general oversight into what was going on with that that large crash. We were able to take the photos and videos and forward that up to the people that were in need to see what was going on. But one big thing that we're looking at is to implement unmanned aircraft into our crash investigation unit, our technical reconstruction unit, to do a crash and crime scene reconstruction. Drones are going to allow us the ability to get up over an accident scene where we may have a major highway blocked and take photos of that scene very quickly, thereby alleviating the need to keep that highway closed and keep people out where it's dangerous. And what we do with the photos, we go up and take a bunch of photos, and then we stitch them together. It's called photogrammetry. And then we're able to get the measurements we need for that scene right off those photographs. Now, it's not going to end the need to have people out there. Obviously, you know, sometimes crashes occur under trees. Sometimes it's too dark to get quality photos. Sometimes the weather's just not going to allow the drone to fly. However, there will be quite a bit of occasions where instead of keeping that highway shut down while we have people on the ground trying to take all those measurements, we'll be able to get a drone up and very quickly get the photos we need to later on get the measurements off that scene.
We're talking about drones with Lieutenant Chris Jeschka with the Wisconsin State Patrol's Special Operations Section. He leads the patrol's drone program. What questions do you have for the Wisconsin State Patrol about how they're using drones? How do you use drones in your job? How has it changed your industry? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Lieutenant, what do these drones look like? What are they equipped with?
Yeah, they're actually very small. The State Patrol flies currently the what's called the DJI Mavic 2 Enterprise. It's a very small drone, probably I'd say when it's fully extended, probably about a foot and a half by a foot and a half. They're very light. We wanted something that our officers could quickly get in and out of the car and not have this huge case. It's equipped with a camera and a zoom camera. Right now, we do not have thermal imaging on there, and our pilots right now are not flying during the hours of darkness. We're going to build up their skills first, and as they get accustomed to the aircraft, then we may be looking to petition the FAA to give us a night waiver, which will allow us to fly at night. But currently, we're flying daylight-only missions. And we just have a visible light camera with a zoom function on it.
And you, the patrol, made a point not to use drones for enforcement or surveillance?
Yeah, that's correct. We have no intent to use drones for enforcement efforts or indiscriminate surveillance. We're not in that business. We don't believe drones should be in that business, and we're not looking to do that. We do use our manned aircraft for traffic enforcement, you know, among the many other things that we use it for, but we have no intent to use our drones for that. That's not why we purchase them.
We're learning about drone use in Wisconsin with Lieutenant Chris Jeschka. He's our guide. He's with the Wisconsin State Patrol's Special Operations Section overseeing the air support unit. What potential do you think drones have across all industries? What questions do you have for the Wisconsin State Patrol about how it is using its drones? What do you want to know about them? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more conversation around these drones right here on the Ideas Network. We're learning about drone use here in Wisconsin with the Wisconsin State Patrol. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Drones are fast becoming a tool for law enforcement agencies. They're no longer a novelty. Drone researchers say that hundreds of public safety agencies have acquired drones in recent years. So what do you want to know about the rules for flying them and keeping the skies safe? Do you fly drones for fun? What do you love about it? Do you take pictures? Join in at 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Chris Jushka stays with us from the Wisconsin State Patrol's Special Operations Section. He heads up the Air Support Unit. Lieutenant, who at the State Patrol is operating these drones, and what kind of training do they get?
Yeah, so we started our program utilizing our already let me rephrase that. We started the new drone program, but we utilized our manned pilots as the first round of drone pilots. When flying a drone, you need to understand that as soon as you take off, you're entering the national airspace system, and there's a host of rules and responsibilities that go with that. And we felt it best to begin our program with the pilot, with our already current manned pilots. But to fly drones, even our manned pilots needed to get a FAA drone certificate, an unmanned aircraft certificate, to allow them to legally fly in support of our law enforcement efforts. So whenever you're flying a drone, that when you're not simply flying for recreation or fun, you fall under what's called Part 107, and you need a FAA drone license to actually fly in support of your business need.
And so these pilots are going to get better over time. There are skills you learn as you become a better drone pilot?
Yeah, that's correct. There's two sides to flying a drone. One is to know the federal regulations that revolve around the national airspace system. The other side is becoming accustomed to and competent in flying the actual drone and using the actual equipment. And so when our pilots, our future drone pilots, come into the State Patrol drone program, they've already had to obtain their FAA license to fly drones. So that's on them. They have to go out and study and obtain their license. They actually have to take a test, an FAA test, and pass that test to get the license. And then we bring them into our internal training, where they attend a 40-hour course, where we test them in their knowledge of the national airspace system and what they've learned. And then we also spend about 3 days initially flying the equipment that we're using. And right now, like I said, that's the Mavic Enterprise system. And we go out and we spend almost 24 hours of flying time learning to use that equipment. Once they're done with that training, however, they're required to go out and get 10 more hours of flight time on their own with the drone before they're even allowed to respond to missions. So we want to make sure that they're capable and competent with the drone that they've received.
Sometimes when people think about drones, they immediately think about privacy concerns. Drones often have cameras. So what rules does the State Patrol have to follow when it comes to privacy?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And there's actually, I'm pulling it up right here. There's a specific law that pertains to law enforcement, which requires law enforcement to get a warrant anytime they intend to use a drone to capture or view someone where that person has an expectation of privacy if they're looking to obtain information regarding a criminal investigation. So law enforcement can't just go up and utilize a drone. The state of Wisconsin has enacted laws that it's actually Wisconsin State Statute 175.55, and it's a law that protects citizens' right to privacy from law enforcement doing indiscriminate searches with drones. We can't do that. We don't intend to do that. If law enforcement wants to use a drone to obtain evidence of a criminal investigation where someone has an expectation of privacy, that law enforcement agency needs to get a warrant signed by the judge.
Mm.
There's also privacy protections for everybody. If whoever uses a drone, when they have an intent to photograph, record, or observe an individual where that individual has an expectation of privacy, that would be a crime under state law. There's nothing saying people can fly drones over houses. People can fly drones over private property because they're up in the national airspace system. And that's a public airspace. So they can be up there with their drones the same way that a manned aircraft, the same way that a hot air balloon or a blimp or a helicopter could be flying over them.
I just want to interrupt here and take a call. Trudy in Illinois is with us. Trudy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, and I understand you're a drone pilot.
Yes. I work for a company called Perfection Property Restoration, and we have a drone program with multiple drones that we send up for large losses for properties, whether it's flood or fire. You know, we were recently in Dayton after the multiple tornadoes, and what we use the drones for is to do property inspections that you wouldn't necessarily see from the ground or you couldn't do because of the structural damage. So roof damage, we, you know, help them clear debris. A lot of times we provide information to the communities that they're not, you know, they don't have access to drones. So it's a great program, and, you know, all of our pilots are licensed, and we also have the thermal imaging to see hot spots on roofs that are, you know, that there were fires that have been put out, but maybe they're, you know, the homeowners or the property owners want to see, you know, they want to make sure that everything is clear to start working.
Trudy, since you've had this drone program, do you find that it has really expanded your ability to get the job done?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of things that you can see and do from the air that you can't do from the ground. So it speeds up the process and gives us a lot more information right away.
Trudy, do you have a particular question? Otherwise, I want to toss it back here to the lieutenant.
No, I just wanted to call in and say I think it's a great program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Trudy. Lieutenant, you know, you heard how Trudy is using their drones. Is that a productive way to use them in assessing damage from disasters?
Yeah, absolutely. Putting equipment up into the air, whether it's a manned aircraft or a drone, provides a unique perspective. You can cover a lot of area very quickly. And, you know, Trudy mentioned they're using thermal imaging. That is an awesome tool to get information, whether it's a heat source for fire damage. In our case, it might be search and rescue, looking for lost children or lost individuals. We've got thermal image cameras that we use from the ground, but again, from the air, we can cover a great deal of land very quickly, and we're able to see, you know, important information that we're looking for. So these drones today, I can program in a flight, and it'll fly by itself. It'll do the mission by itself. It'll search the area. It'll come back and land by itself, and truly incredible. We're using technology today that, you know, 5-7 years ago was only available to the military and only at extremely high cost. State Patrol, we only paid about $2,000 per drone. So it's quite an efficient value-added tool for our agency.
Well, here in the summer, a really ideal time for people to fly their drones if they have them. What should we know about the proper way to fly a drone? Are there rules that we should follow?
Yeah, so things get a little complex because there's some things to consider flying drones. If you're flying purely for recreation, meaning you're going out to fly a drone for fun, you do not need to get a drone license from the FAA. But there's still certain rules you have to follow. You have to keep that drone in your line of sight, meaning that you always have to be able to pick that drone up with your eyes while you're flying. You can't fly higher than 400 feet. There's a speed restriction of 100 miles an hour, and most of the time that doesn't affect most drone operators, but there are some racing drones out there. There's some fixed wing that can fly pretty fast, so we've got a speed limit on there. But I think most importantly, and the message I would want to get out to your listeners is, it's easy to go out and buy a drone. You can get that at most hobby stores, even online or, you know, through Amazon. But once you have a drone, as soon as you put that drone up in the air, you enter that national airspace system. And there are rules and regulations you have to follow. The FAA is concerned about safety in airspace, so they want to keep drones separated from manned aircraft. As a recreational drone operator, you're not allowed to fly in controlled airspace without permission from air traffic control.
And we're going to have to leave it right there. Lieutenant, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. Thank you, Kate.
Lieutenant Chris Juschka is with the Wisconsin State Patrol's Special Operations Section, where he oversees the drone program. Coming up, we'll talk with the head of the UW Flight Lab about the future of drones, and we'll get answers to more of your questions on buying them and using them. We're at 800-642-1234. That's after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's a conversation about drones here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last night, the New York PD flew drones over millions of people taking in fireworks over the East River. They only started using drones 8 months ago and plan to put them above every big event to get a bird's-eye view of crowds. Meanwhile, the Army says it plans to start using these tiny helicopter-like drones sometime this month in Afghanistan. The drones are nearly silent, according to Stars and Stripes, and they'll be used for reconnaissance missions. Do you fly drones commercially? How do you use them? Have they made your job easier? What potential do you think drones have across all industries? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Chris Johnson is director of the UW Flight Lab at UW-Madison's College of Engineering. He is a drone program specialist, and he teaches a course on drones. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Happy to be here, Kate. Thank you. Good morning.
So we know that Wisconsin is among the states with the highest use of drones by public safety agencies. Why do you think they're becoming so appealing for these agencies in their line of work?
I think it really boils down to the ease of use. These are flying robots, and you can fly different multispectral cameras and sensors around to get information from an aerial perspective that you couldn't do prior to the artificial intelligence that makes drones so easy to fly.
So they are very versatile. They're, you can program them on the ground, and then they carry out your mission.
That's right. They have very advanced autopilots that they can be flown autonomously, semi-autonomously, and they're really not manually flown. It's like moving an avatar through a video game. If you want the drone to go up, you just push the up lever, and when you stop pushing the levers, it stays still, and that's the artificial intelligence on board that makes the drone so easy to fly.
How are you seeing some basic applications for drones being used? And where are those aha moments where you're thinking, yeah, drones are so great for that?
Well, I think, you know, you're seeing drone footage with regard to visible cameras being used in all facets of media and news reporting. Intelligence gathering, as Lieutenant Juschka was talking about with regard to public safety and law enforcement. I think he talked a little bit more about some of the advanced sensors using thermal. But, you know, there's the industries that are using drones the most are real estate, insurance, utility inspections, any engineered structure that requires routine maintenance can be inspected. Not only inspected, but also modeled. Using the still imagery, you can use post-processing software in a process called photogrammetry that will allow you to actually create a virtual reality model of that structure and start to derive dimensions and check for plumb and level, and then also get a high-resolution image for structural integrities and things like that.
So are drones more cost-effective than hiring a pilot and sending up that aircraft?
Certainly. You know, take, for example, the utility inspection industry where there's miles and miles of pipeline, transmission lines that routinely need to be inspected. The status quo is to hire a really expensive helicopter crew with expensive camera equipment to fly miles and miles of line. Currently, there's limitations on flying drones beyond line of sight, but there are utility companies. For example, Xcel Energy's out of Colorado recently, and I think it was back in September of 2018, They earned an authorization from the Federal Aviation Administration to fly beyond line of sight. So drones are going to be able to do this for pennies on the dollar as soon as the technology proves that it can do it safely.
How are we seeing drones used in agriculture?
So in agriculture, another big application, a fixed-wing drone, for example, could fly for a few hours over a large plot of land and ultimately generate what's equivalent to a heat map to show crop health. The standard bandwidth that is used to analyze crop health, NDVI, stands for Normalized Deviation Vegetation Index. It's a health index of crops. And so this way the farmers can see areas that actually require attention as opposed to spraying in an entire field. They can actually pursue precision agriculture and just target the problem areas.
Is this relatively new for agriculture and the utilities? Is this kind of a new thing, a new tool on the block?
Within the last few years, certainly, and there are some startup companies that are moving toward advanced AI with regard to taking these heat maps and automatically triggering areas of further inspection. So you may use a manned aircraft to do this as well and cover a wider area in a low-resolution heat map and then look at the red spots, so to speak, the problem areas, and then send in a lower-flying drone to get really high-resolution imagery down to the sub-centimeter, sub-millimeter resolution level.
We're talking with Chris Johnson. He directs the UW Flight Lab at UW-Madison. He's a drone program specialist. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you fly drones commercially? How do you use them? How have they made your job easier? And what potential do you think drones have across all industries? You can call in or email ideas@wpr.org. So drones are also being used in these more advanced ways. NASA has found some interesting purposes for drones. Can you tell us what's going on with NASA?
NASA's funding a lot of things with regard to drone integration. They've got this infrastructure that they're ending the last phases of what they call UTM. It's the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Traffic Management Network that they're working very closely with industry partners and the FAA. To integrate drones into the national airspace system so that drones are communicating to each other, their position. They're communicating with manned aircraft and with the administrative ground stations to make sure that they're all separated. NASA's also funding a lot of work with regard to urban air mobility. You've seen this in the news with regard to companies like Uber wanting to fly people around in drone air taxi services. NASA's also funding...
Wait, air taxi services? Would explain.
So air taxi, it's actually being fielded overseas where it's basically a human carrying drone. And it's almost, it's just like, Google's, Waymo or Uber's autonomous driving systems where you get in and there's no pilot, where in taxi service, there's no taxi driver. And so it's pretty far fetched, but there's a lot of research and development that needs to be done to push that envelope.
So you teach a drone class. How hard is it to learn how to fly these drones?
It's not difficult with regard to the actual stick and rudder skills. I've got four nephews ranging from two to eight, and they all have drones. And except for the 2-year-old, he's still working on it, right? He's still working on walking, but very shortly he'll be able to fly the drone. I actually just had my drone out at a barbecue last night for the 4th of July. And a 4-year-old was flying my drone. Like I said, it's really easy to fly the drone. Moving an avatar through the video game is the metaphor that I use. The challenging part is understanding the rules of the airspace. And I believe Lieutenant Jessica was talking about some of the issues with regard to people who are certified. They're going to follow the rules and keep their drone separated from manned aircraft. And then there's a large group of people who just don't know. They don't know the rules of the sky, and so they... more or less ignorantly, will fly at altitudes that are restricted and things like that.
Right. The 4-year-old doesn't know rules with the toys,
right,
let
exactly.
alone rules of the sky. So as you develop more drone skills, of course, you have to know what you can and can't do in the airspace. But in terms of developing better, more keen skills as a drone pilot, is that something you learn over time?
Well, I think so. I mean, so there's certainly a keen set of skills for getting a cool shot, for example. So the way I describe people, there's standard flight protocols for creating a 3D model, for example. If you're inspecting a building and you want to create a model, the drone will more or less autonomously fly itself in that standard pattern. But if you're using drones for art, say to get a really cool Hollywood shot in a movie, now you have a multi-crew situation where a pilot will fly a pretty advanced flight path and the camera operator will pan or tilt or a combination thereof the camera to get a really cool parallax shot. So yes, there's certainly skill involved with flying the drone, but the way things are going, it's going to be fully autonomous before too long.
So Hollywood is also using drones to make movies.
Absolutely. Hollywood was one of the first industries to pressure Congress to allow for these companies to be able to use drones for commercial purposes. And so that started a whole flurry of waiver processes in the years of 2014, 2015, before the drone regulations were published. These companies actually were authorized to use drones in very limited circumstances. And I helped a few companies get that authorization during that time.
So there are a lot of job prospects out there for these people who are sophisticated and can really fly these drones. What about the everyday person who wants to go out and buy a drone and fly it? How do you get started?
So, I mean, the barrier to entry is very low. NASA predicts that a drone's going to be a household item in the next 10 or so years. And so we're already seeing that with the number of sales with regard to recreational drones. I mean, they're very affordable. You can get a really high-quality drone with a good camera for under $1,000 these days. And so the problem is that it doesn't come with a rule book. And the FAA would love to see this, but industry is opposed to having people register the drone. Say you go to Best Buy, for example. The ideal situation is where you have to register the drone at the checkout
area. Point of
area.
Purchase.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, Best Buy doesn't want that. The way it should be is like guns, right? So if in order to purchase a gun, you have to have it registered. That's the way the FAA would like to see with drones, but I think you're at the limits of what commerce will support.
So there are certainly policy things that need to get worked out. We're learning about drones this hour with Chris Johnson. He heads up the flight lab at UW-Madison, and he is a drone program specialist. Are you interested in flying drones but don't know how to get started? What do you want to know about the drone you just purchased or have your eye on to buy? We have an expert on hand to answer your questions. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It is drones all this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For our military, airspace is growing more congested and more dangerous. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that China and Russia now field fleets of their own drones. And the Pentagon's budget for drones this year topped more than $9 billion. And these drones cover the gamut from small, relatively cheap drones to unmanned jet aircraft that require runways. What interests you or confuses you about the drones that take to the sky? How do you see drones used in your line of work? Do you think they could open up new ways of doing things? What about privacy and FAA rules? Join in at 800-642-1234. Chris Johnson heads up the UW Flight Lab at UW-Madison, and he teaches a course on drones. Let's go to the phone now with Jeff joining us somewhere in Wisconsin. He's driving, I think. Jeff, hi.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm from a farm family, and my cousin's real good with a drone. And, you know, I use it for a few things. I mean, it's kind of neat to put videos online of, you know, big equipment harvesting and put grain out and all. But the two things that are really productive are, one is looking at the land, you know, before the crops are too tall, you can see where there's some of the ground's wetter and some drier, and know where you need to lay to field tile, which, you know, farmers know better tiling means better production. and you'll see areas where the tile is broken based on those patterns.
How long have you been using drones, Jeff?
Well, for a few years now. The other thing being, if you know, after storms, you're wondering if there's any crop damage. If you walk a field, you go, oh, there's a little bit. There's not worth filing a claim on that. But the drone, you might fly over and see, wow, there's areas that are real big. You can file a claim. Contrastly, you might look at an area and go, wow, this is pretty large, but it's the only one in the area, only one field, and it's not that bad, so why waste everybody's time on it?
Mm.
I'll give you a couple practical things that really do increase the profitability of, you know, how to plant, where to plant. You know, you can also, not only with the managing tile, but you can, before harvest, you can see some areas of the field that are growing better than others, and think, maybe I need to change the type of seed I'm planting there.
Yeah, you can make some changes. Sounds like a real return on investment there, Jeff sees in agriculture, Chris.
Yes, very much so. And not that expensive for what you're gaining knowledge-wise.
Yeah. Jeff, thanks so much for the call. Chris Johnson, sounds like the UW Flight School is also really working in this agriculture area.
Right, yeah. So there's a lab on campus that's funded by NASA, and they fly a more advanced camera. It's called a hyperspectral sensor. And as Jeff was pointing out, certainly you can look at visible spectra, you know, color images to see areas of flooding. I talked earlier about the NDVI heat maps. You can use thermal imagery to look at what energy is radiated. But with hyperspectral data, it gives you a little bit more information with regard to electromagnetic spectrum bandwidth. And what the scientists on campus are using the hyperspectral cameras for is so that they can actually see down below what is reflected and radiated from a plant down to the cellular level so that they can detect invasive crops, something, you know, like potato blight, for example. I'm not an expert on this, but I understand that potato blight, once it overtakes a field, that field can no longer be farmed. And so there's a huge return on investment with regard to that. And this lab is trying to push the envelope on the use of hyperspectral data.
Let's go to Brenda now in Delafield. Hi, Brenda.
Hello, Kate and Chris. My question is, like Chris, I have a nephew who's very interested in drones, and he's a teenager, and I'm curious about what kinds of programs of study are developing across the nation and where to point a young person who is really interested in drone studies. Does Madison have a program? I have a nephew at North Dakota who's aviation studies there, and they're developing drone programs. But what direction and where is the education that would be best for someone who's interested in this field?
That's a good question. It's very broad. The University of North Dakota is one of the leading universities with regard to drone operations. And so certainly you have a good resource there. There are all kinds of STEM programs for young people who want to learn about what makes a drone fly. You can just get online and Google these things, but there's programs funded by nonprofits. Some of them are paid programs where they'll bring your nephew in, teach him about all the remote sensing equipment that is on board the drone, teach them how to do some basic programming to integrate the sensors, make the drone fly, and do things like gesture control and things like that. So that's where I would start. If it were my nephew, I would point them in the direction of trying to get involved with actually understanding the artificial intelligence and the remote sensing. And then from there, I mean, the field is wide open. Certainly they can look into the peer-reviewed studies on drone technology and the data integration.
Brenda, thanks. Let's go to Dick now in Middleton. Hi, Dick.
Yeah, good morning. I have just a quick question regarding privacy. You're talking about the airspace regulations, and I'm not sure what is that. I mean, as far as my private property, and as drones become more popular, where's the trespassing line? I mean, is it down to the earth? Is it 30 feet, 100 feet? Where do I have a right to take it down if it's trespassing?
Hi, Dick. That's a good question. That's a question that's kind of burning, and everyone at the even at the highest levels. I'm not an attorney, and so I'm going to go ahead and say that I just tell people a basic rule of thumb when I'm teaching my students. And so people have what is defined very loosely as a reasonable expectation of privacy. And so the way I define that for my students is I ask them to imagine that the camera aboard the drone is their eyeballs, right? And so if they position the drone in a manner, in a position where that camera, if it were their eyeballs, it was connected to their body and they're actually on your private property, then they're probably trespassing. And so there's a very solid body of trespassing law out there that's going to protect you. But take, for example, if your neighbor, you have a neighbor that lives next door and they have a three-story house, if they look out the third story and they look into your backyard, do you have a reasonable expectation of privacy? Probably not, right? So you kind of have to look at it in that perspective. But if a drone pilot were to put their drone over the middle of your backyard and look at what you're barbecuing for the 4th of July barbecue fest, they're probably invading your privacy. So that's a good way to think about it, Dick.
Thanks for the call. The UW Flight School is also working on bomb detection through drones. What do we know about this?
So this isn't with my lab specifically. Mm-hmm. This is with a professor emeritus, Jerry Kolsinski. He's a nuclear physicist, and he's working currently on miniaturizing a neutron generator that can detect buried explosives up to a meter beneath the surface of the Earth. And so he started working with me on trying to understand the payload capacity of drones, because that's going to dictate the size of his neutron generator. But the idea here is that without making contact with the surface of the Earth, which would detonate the explosive, he can then fly it around a neutron generator, and his science will start to detect the signatures of the gamma rays that come off from a buried explosive. And so there would be a fleet of gamma ray detector drones as well that would then triangulate the position of the buried explosive. And there's a huge potential for this, because there's 110 million undiscovered landmines throughout the world, and using this technology to clean it up would be very valuable.
In the last few seconds we have, how do you expect the drone industry to grow from your viewpoint?
So I think right now we're at the early adoption phase. I think the innovators and the early adopters are pretty much set. They're pushing the industry forward, and the early majority is starting to take on the technology, with the late majority and the laggards coming somewhere in the next 3 to 5 years. I think the big push right now is to get drones certified for flying beyond line of sight, certified for flying over people. Right now, the companies that are doing this have paid lots and lots of money to get these authorizations to do it. So they're pushing the industry forward. Another thing to look at is urban air mobility. The Ubers and the Boeings and the Airbus companies out there who want to fly around people using air taxi services. So that's something to look at. And it's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Likewise.
Chris Johnson is director of the UW Flight Lab at UW-Madison's College of Engineering. He is a drone program specialist teaching a course on drones at the college. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.